Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I will be with you for the next hour. We got a late start tonight. There was a logjam of shows in front of us, so we apologize to anyone that's been waiting for the past 15 minutes or so of the top of the hour on this December the 19th. Still on the West Coast, or the morning of the 20th on the East Coast and the Central Time Zone. We're very pleased to have you with us tonight. We are going to go right into the show and tonight's guest because we have a lot of stuff to cover. We're going to be talking about the issue of Barack Hussein Muhammad Obama. And I reluctantly put the junior on the end of it. I think I'm going to stop using it after the last piece that I wrote. I would like to direct anyone in the listening audience who would like to follow along in the general content of what we're going to be talking about to go to my website, Direct Light Productions. Now, before you click off of the player page, if you're listening on BBS Radio via the on-screen player, I suggest you click on your browser and open a new page so that you can continue listening to the broadcast when you move. Otherwise, you have to go through the whole process of logging back on. If you have an iTunes player or something like that, of course, you know that it will keep playing while you are, and some of the other players will do this too, Real Player, whatever, while you are moving around through your browser. If you are using the home page player, though, the one you access by clicking the Station 1 button and then clicking the arrow near my picture and the Evident Footprints logo, you will be able to keep listening by opening a new page in the same browser. You can go up to File or however, whatever method you like to use, and just click New Page or New Window often is what it will say in most browsers. That said, we are going to bring tonight's guest on board. He is a scientist. He's also very discerning and very aware of what's going on around the world because of the type of work he does, and he has been fighting the powers that be because of his many innovations in science and they're energy-related in terms of power, giving us more power out of his inventions than what goes into them, so to speak. We're talking about over-unity gain in a more technical sense. And we've talked about this on other shows. We've talked about spirituality. We've talked about UFOs. We've talked about corruption in the government. We've talked about consciousness. This man is right on with everything he says. He is our weekly guest on Friday nights on Evident Footprints. He's a scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher, and he is my co-host on Friday nights on Evident Footprints, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Don. It's a pleasure to be here as usual.
It's a pleasure to have you here, and we're just a few days away from Christmas, and it's amazing that we have to spoil this celebrate holiday season with the garbage that we're going to talk about tonight, but it is the truth, and we're going to reveal it to our listening audience, and I appreciate your willingness to go into this topic.
No problem, Don. You know, I'll do anything to help you.
Okay. Well, I know you've been following this insanity that has preceded and presided and then proceeded the presidential election. A lot of P's there. We got some alliteration going on tonight. And I am not the only journalist that has, or talk show host that has tackled this issue. I've had the opportunity to speak to several really good world-class investigators. Dr. Kasim Khalil, talk show host Rick Adams, talk show host, journalist, author Alan Stang, and some others. Dr. Greg Evenson, who has a doctorate degree in criminology and has an extensive law enforcement background as well. He's read my work. He has written some really interesting articles himself, appraising the situation that's going on in the government, in the financial community, and it's all corruption. And of course, this fraud of an election that we had, and I'm being very strong in my words on the basis of the information we're going to share tonight. I've always been convinced of this, but even more so. There's an article that was published in WorldNet Daily today, written by, or actually it's a couple of days ago, I should say, but it came to my attention today. It was about 2-3 days ago. Dr. Jerome Corsi, who wrote the book Obama Nation, and it's sort of a pun. It's two words, but if you say abomination real fast, it takes on a whole new meaning. Clever title. Dr. Corsi went to Kenya, he also has been investigating the situation in Hawaii. There has been an investigator that went to the next-door neighbor of the so-called residence where Barack Obama lived, and there's no such recollection of the Dunhams or Obama having been there. And then there's, of course, a microfiche that was published within the last month and a half, I would say. It's a retrieved newspaper article. This thing, Jim, I've seen the whole thing, the page and the page next to it, and none of the vertical or horizontal lines on the newspaper print match. Now, one could say, well, when they took the film, the photograph, which was transferred to the microfiche, that the camera and the page have to be aligned a certain way to get the clearest shot, but you would have a consistency. You wouldn't have left margin lines leaning in toward the center of the photo or the reproduction, and you wouldn't have the right margin lines, and we're talking about borders, leaning toward the center from the right side. They would be parallel. Or you would see a curve or a dip if the paper was not perfectly flat. They often shoot these through glass so that the paper is completely flat. So then we have the issue of the horizontal lines. The vertical lines are out of square. They're out of square with each other. They're out of square with the paper. and they don't even form 90-degree angles with the horizontal lines. The horizontal lines, which are, we're talking about something like you see in a classified ads page. And the birth records says Mr. and Mrs. Barack H. Obama, 6085 Kalanianaole Highway. Oh, I said it. Okay. Son, August 4th, it says. And that is even evident that is inserted into what was an original newspaper. I think what would be interesting is to get the original paper and make the comparison, because this is obviously another forgery. So we have more proof coming out of Hawaii that Obama was not born there. We have no hospital records. We have some things that we're going to talk about regarding Stanley Ann Dunham that are very revealing, and a lot of the listening audience still hasn't heard this. If anyone listened to my show last night, they did hear this. So I know I sent the link to my article that you could look at it, and to be fair to our audience, you had a chance to just sort of peruse over it without going into too much detail. Give me your general impression of it, if you would.
Well, are you referring to the fifth part of the article or the,
yeah,
or the article
five.
In general?
I know you didn't study it like you do everything else, but just in general, you saw some pictures, for example. They're different pictures than what has been seen on the web or on mainstream so far.
Oh, yeah. Well, some of the pictures, of course, I knew about before you posted the article.
Are you still with us, Jim?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay,
can
I
you
think
hear me?
We lost Jim Murray. Seth, if you're listening in, we've lost our guest. If you could try to bring him back, that would be wonderful. And in the meantime, I'm going to go on with this topic, and hopefully Seth will let me know when Jim... he's back. Oh, Seth,
as far as I know, I never left.
Okay,
can you
are
hear
you
me,
still
Don?
There, Jim?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, I never left. I could hear you guys perfectly.
Oh, yeah, your voice completely disappeared. I just wanted your general, let's say, take on what you saw. I know you didn't study it like you do physics, but you saw some pictures there that are not mainstream photos, and I was wondering if you had any impressions that you wanted to share. But before we get started on this.
Well, I really didn't have time to study it in depth, but I recognized the pictures because you and I had discussed them privately prior to other shows.
Mm-hmm.
And I recognized the... there was one picture that I didn't see, which was kind of interesting, was the one where the guy was in the yoga position. Was that the late Dr. King, I think his name was?
Yes,
the
Dr.
yoga
George
expert.
King. Yeah.
That picture I hadn't seen, but the other ones I had seen when I was helping you with a previous investigation, Don.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Just for the listening audience. Now, what I'm going to be doing is highlighting some of the main features of this article, because there's a lot of information that came out, and it's a worthwhile topic for those that haven't read it or haven't had the means to get to it. You've got to be willing to sit down and open up your mind and consider some things that have not been brought forth. They've not been proposed to the public in general, yet I start out by describing this Jerome Corsi story that I just read, except now we're going to go to Kenya for a moment and consider what Dr. Corsi investigated after he wrote the book Obamanation and had given numerous interviews. Dr. Corsi took a trip to Kenya, and he actually located some of Obama's so-called relatives. Now, they're calling these women his grandmother. Barack Obama Sr., just as a recap for those that aren't familiar with the story, had four, maybe five wives. And two of the women have come forward and expressed close associations with Obama's so-called mother, Stanley Ann Dunham. Now, no one in God's universe thinks that Barack Obama looks anything like his father, or the man professed to be his father. And we now have concrete evidence that Stanley Ann Dunham could not have even sired Barack Obama in the time frame that they're claiming. Number one, because she was in the state of Washington attending classes at the University of Washington. Contrary to all the stories we've been told, we have seen the transcripts. We know that she's been at the school. The school has published this information. Now, I did not put this in my article primarily because it's come out very recently, but there are a couple of really good investigators, journalists. D.V. Kidd is one. And also Debbie Schlussel. Debbie Schlussel is more mainstream in a sense. She's sort of like a Laura Ingraham in her style, but she has her own unique style as well. She'll post some information that's been hard for other people to get. And we're going to be talking about that. So there have been some articles that have covered this issue of Stanley Ann Dunham having been in the state of Washington and not in Hawaii. Now, it's a pretty easy thing to prove. So why are the courts throwing these lawsuits out? Jim, you have any idea or any perspective on that?
Well, I mean, considering the gravity of the situation, it's totally appalling to me that the courts wouldn't consider the evidence that's being presented.
Yeah, Jim, can you make sure you're close to your phone? And if you are, then I'm going to ask Don or Seth to make sure Jim's volume is loud enough.
Yeah, I'm right up against my phone, Don.
Okay, engineers, if you could please raise Jim's volume. I can barely hear him. Okay, you were saying, Jim.
Can you hear me better, Don?
Yeah, that's better. Okay.
Yeah, I would say, considering the gravity of the issue that's at stake, it's appalling to me that the judges would be throwing these cases out without review. Our Constitution clearly states that in order to run for the office of presidency, a person has to be a naturalized citizen, but a natural-born citizen. And, you know, that makes it a very important issue. You know, that Obama proved his citizenship. And, first of all, the man himself is reluctant to come forward with any supporting evidence to that effect. And, nobody seems to be concerned about that in the general circles that are following him. And so when we have certain upright citizens that are, concerned enough to bring a lawsuit to bear, it's just disgusting that the judges involved refuse to hear the cases. Now, if that doesn't smack of conspiracy, then how else would you define it?
Oh, I would say it's just the luck of the draw. It is conspiracy, obviously. This is the conspiracy of the millennium after the financial one, you know. This is number two. This plays a backseat to it, actually, but it's every bit as important. You're talking about a foreigner who has been secretly infiltrated into the political system from the get-go, jumping into a state Senate seat and then a national Senate, the U.S. Senate, and then running for president. It's absurd. And it's obviously someone who has been being used as a puppet, and so the powers that be behind the scenes are pushing all the buttons that are causing the courts to act totally irresponsibly and really as if they're in fear. They're behind the scenes, trust that there's a great fear in the minds of these men and women that are the Supreme Court. Now, I mentioned Corsi. He also got a taped interview of Sarah, the grandmother who claims that she saw the birth. And I raised the issue in my article. Now, she claims she saw the birth, and this was recorded on tape. I actually heard the recording as well. And she spoke in the Luo tribe language, and yet the translation in English is clear that you understand what's being said. It's being very accurately translated into English. I've heard the whole recording and I've read the transcript, which matches the recording word for word. Now, that said, the second issue is an issue of another one of the grandmothers, because of these multiple marriages, and I use that word in quotes, listeners. I'm not saying that they are actual grandmothers. I'm saying this is being implied by those that have made up this whole fiction. Acacia, in an interview, and I'd written about that before and brought up the point that in spite of the fact I brought it up in a prior article, it applies here because we now have conflicting stories with grandmothers saying that the first time Barack went to Kenya was 1985. Contrary to his claim, he went there in 1987 after his brother David died. Now, he claims Alma is a half-sister. I brought forth some evidence that she's a full sister according to the story. See, we have to keep reminding ourselves this is all a fiction, so these people are not really related. We've been told they're related. We've been led to believe they're related. So if they have the same mother, or if they're claiming they have the same mother, then they're brother and sister. They're not half-brothers and sisters. So, or half-brother and sister. In that reference, Kezia's statements about having met Barack in 1985, knowing that he went to Kenya first at that time, is a total lie. If he was born in Kenya, his first visit to Kenya was 1961. That's a 24-year difference right there. Then there is proof through both Corsi's visit there to Kenya, my research, the research of Andy Martin and a few others that shows Obama was there in 80, 81, 83, and again 85, 87, and Lord knows how many other times. His so-called aunt was living in Massachusetts illegally. She was an illegal alien living here in this country, and they sent her back to Kenya to avoid her being questioned, of course. They had the grandmother die the day before the election. We have another CIA spook now. Madeleine Dunham has now been turned into a CIA spook. So all of this information coming out about the stories is really conflicting, and they can't all be true. One can't be true, and all the others are false the way they presented it. There's no record of him being born in Hawaii. It's quite possible his first time to Hawaii was when he was 10, but we don't even know that story is true. How can you gauge, other than the so-called picture at the airport around Christmas time, which they claim was 1971, how do you gauge where these pictures are taken unless they're in front of some famous landmark? And there is such a picture in a past article that I wrote in part 4, which shows that he's only a few blocks away from the UN building in the southern end of Central Park with his grandparents, and he's wearing a wedding ring. And he's wearing a wedding ring which would have occurred when he got married. I think it was 1992 is when he got married. But this is supposedly a picture with his grandparents, again, I use the word in quotes, in front of the river there, this river scenery that's the lake by the park. And there is a wedding ring on his finger. Now, he would have gotten married in 1983 when he was supposedly graduating from Columbia University. And again, we have no record of him having been at Columbia University other than these stories. It's just one lie after another. These things aren't adding up. What we're seeing is that you don't wear a wedding ring before you get married. If he's wearing the wedding ring in 1983, he got married in 1983, or the picture was taken at another time, maybe 1992. That's still 16 years ago. He could have looked much younger. 16 years ago, nobody knew who this guy was. He wasn't around. He wasn't known amongst people around this country. Now, he claims he was, but nobody can even prove it at these universities. He refuses to show his transcripts, likely because there are none. As a scientist, Jim, how does this hit you? As a teacher, how does this hit you?
Well, I mean, it's contrary to all the laws of evidence, as you well know. Whether you're doing true scientific investigation or any kind of legal investigation. I mean, there are just a certain normal chronology of the way facts add up, and the manner in which things are exposed usually demonstrate true chapters of a person's life. And each of those things have surrounding incidences which usually can be verified. And you don't have to be a public figure for this to be true. I mean, you know, Joe Blow the ice cream man, I'm sure, has a same type of a situation in his life. If you take the trouble to go back and research it, I know just from listening to what you were just saying, the pictures that were running through my head, stimulated by your remarks, of my own family background, and the fact that both my dad and my grandfather were involved in politics, you can actually go back and look at pictures, and you'll see me there as a kid, you know, amongst the various political components. And so it's all traceable. It's all natural. When stuff doesn't add up, it usually doesn't add up for a reason. And I'm inclined to agree with you that there's something fraudulent about this whole thing. But, you know, the real telltale issue, in my opinion, is the guy's reluctance to produce his own birth certificate. Why would that be the case? Give me one good reason why any normal human being would hesitate to demonstrate that he was born where and when he says he was. You know, and if you start with that as being a little askew, then everything else is bound to be out of kilter also.
Well, it is.
That's my take.
Yes, exactly. Okay, now, that said, and we could go on really ad nauseum, talking about what's going on in Kenya or in Indonesia or in Hawaii. I pointed out in the article that both George H.W. Bush and John McCain also set the precedent for this by illegally coming into the country, by having been inserted into the military. In both cases, it's happened. Both went into the Navy. Navy is really the supervisory head of intelligence, as you well know, Jim. Naval intelligence is controls the issues with space, outer space, as well as the seas. And so they're pretty much controlling how one can move around through the air, through space, and on the ocean, from continent to continent. And they control many, many aspects of commerce because of that. We have 10,000 flagships that belong to the United States, but only two of them fly the American flag, 200 fly the American flag, and the other 9,800, we're talking 9,800 other ships are flying foreign flags. Something is wrong with that picture. So it shows the same type of conspiratorial action on the part of these countries who are colluding with the UN, who Obama himself has very strong ties to through his handlers, Zbigniew Brzezinski, who is an admitted, he's come out and said everything except I'm his handler. Okay, that's the only word he's not used. Henry Kissinger, George Soros, who is the money man behind Obama's campaign, some Saudis that have donated massive amounts of money. They're claiming the Saudis are taking the responsibility for his education. We're going to get into that in a moment. But these things have been done before by Bush and McCain. McCain's problem and his reason for not challenging Obama's citizenship is he himself is not an American. It's as simple as that. And it's because he could not have been, even if his parents were American and he was born in Panama Canal Zone, there is no record of it. And the hospital he claims he was born in was built 7 years after his birth, maybe even longer than 7 years. We don't know the exact date that they They said, it's finished. The hospital's open for business. McCain, they claim, by that time, would have been 7 years old. Roughly 7 years old. How does one become born in a hospital that doesn't exist?
Well, I was just going to say, talk about a remarkable conception. You know, that's on a par with the story of Jesus Christ.
Now, that fact I discovered, I can take credit for that because I found the presidential order directing the engineers to acquire the land to start laying the borderline for where the hospital was going to be, the boundaries, in other words, of the hospital property. It hadn't been done until they sent an engineering team in there to do surveying and other analyses in May of 1941. Now, McCain was born, they claim, August 29th. Funny, both of these guys were born in August. That should put up a red flag right there. August 29th, he was born in 1936. In 1941, in May, he completed the survey. By the time it got to FDR, he issued the order on December 17th, which is just 3 days ago, all the way back to 1941. That's quite a long time ago, 67 years ago, that is. 3 days ago, that was 67 years ago. Now, and that's interesting, too, because 6 and 7 is 13. You got another Illuminati number there. Everything is planned out to the T by these people. So McCain didn't say anything.
That's a very good point, too, Don. What are the odds that you would have two major candidates, both running for the office of president, both with this type of background, and those are also the only two selections that we have? You know, it's not like we have half a dozen worthwhile individuals to choose from. Yeah. This is the kind of tactics that the American political situation has been reduced to.
Mm-hmm. Now,
that doesn't smack of a conspiracy and control, then I'm sorry, I don't know what does.
Yes. That said, now, another journalist, Andy Martin, filed a lawsuit, and I'd like to read something that I put in my article, because this basically covers a very important point that Martin made to me in discussing this whole issue. I'm going to read out of the article a section where I'm discussing Andy Martin's lawsuit and a conversation that I had with him. After a second, this is under the subtitle heading, Another Lawsuit Filed. After a second lawsuit filed in Hawaii by journalist Andy Martin, officials declared that Obama's files were sealed. Why? What secrets are the governor, secretary of health, and the attorney general of Hawaii hiding? Obama has produced a fake certificate deemed a horrible forgery by forensic analysts, so Hawaiian officials could not be hiding that. The sealing declaration sounds like yet another Obama ruse intended to dissuade further investigation. As if the pressure of so much scrutiny became too much for her to bear, Obama's grandmother, Madeline Lee Payne Dunham, became publicly ill. Obama delayed his flight to Honolulu because of my investigation team's presence there, Martin alluded. Martin also stressed to this author that, I don't want to hear what you have to say about Obama's citizenship or other investigative research. I don't want people to accuse me of conspiring with someone else or having ulterior motives. And then I said, evidently, investigating the conspirators becomes itself a conspiracy. That I go on to say, this author responded to Martin's comment by asking, quote, even if the information leads one to the truth, Martin remained steadfastly determined not to hear what my research had uncovered, though he was polite in doing so. In retrospect, Madeline Dunham's sudden illness seemed suspicious, as if she were the cause of Obama's sudden trip to Hawaii. The story appeared to be meant for public consumption. Is it mere coincidence that Obama's records were sealed at the same time? Reminiscent of CIA tales, Madeline Dunham suddenly died of cancer on November 3rd, 2008, the day before the presidential election. Comments on that, Jim?
Well, it just seems like a very timely death, in my opinion. But then, you know, what do I know?
Yeah, and when you compare the smiling faces the next night, okay, yeah, he was elected the president of the United States. The Black Widow dress that Michelle Obama was wearing is in itself, we could do a whole show on that. And the color coordination with the children, the two girls, dressed one matching Barack suit and the other matching with a red dress, this hourglass color on Michelle Obama's dress. The dress actually was a voodoo, let's say, I don't know if you would call it a curse. It's definitely a voodoo exercise or a ritual being fulfilled. The significance of the Black Widow is that she eats her mate, and it's more or less to say, mess with my man and I'll eat you. And my bite is poisonous. It's deathly. So it's a shamanistic, experience, we'll say. That in and of itself belies the story about the grandmother dying. Certainly there would be some reverence. There would be some, you could see it on someone's face that they're emotional about a loss close to them. A death in the family, especially someone as close as the grandparents were to him, and I'm using his words, would be so overwhelming that even becoming president of the universe would be a bit of a downer. If you get my meaning, it's, I'm not saying he should be out there mourning and bawling his eyes out, but you can tell if those things are real or not. You can read the spiritual side of what's going on. Do you agree with that, Jim, or am I just being too perceptive?
No, I don't think you're exaggerating at all. I mean, come on, granted that the public life would have to go on, but you don't wear a loud red dress and then a coordinated ensemble with your kids under conditions like that. They wouldn't even have to mention the mourning, but they would express it, subtly through their dress and their mannerisms. And I don't think that that's out of line at all. I think it's normal human behavior. But then, of course, we're not talking about normal humans. So I
yes.
do agree with what you're saying.
Yes. Okay. Now, to go on, I'm going to come back to Corsi for a minute because his investigation went to Hawaii, and he had read Frank Marshall Davis's book called The Sex Rebel, or Sex Rebel. And in this book, Frank Marshall Davis, who was an acquaintance and a mentor of Barack Obama, the claim is, describes a fling that he had with this mystery couple from Seattle named Dot and Lloyd. Now, I'd like you to listen to how I lay this evidence out and tell me if this doesn't make sense. Dot and Lloyd were surmised by Corsi to possibly be Stanley Armour and Madeline Dunham. the grandparents, and that he changed the names to hide who they were. That's always a possibility. The evidence I have in a photo shows that there are three couples sitting with each other's mate, and they're sitting rather close to them. They're actually being physically affectionate in this photo, but they're not with their own spouses. In other words, they're swinging, in a sense. Now, I use that with a little bit of reservation because that might be a stretch, but we have an account of this going on with Frank Marshall Davis and Dot and Lloyd. And in a moment, it's going to make that picture mean a lot more than what it did at when I made this comment. There were two female vice presidents at the Bank of Hawaii, and I happened to find the sending away party speech that one of Madeline Dunham's employees made. He described her as being very level-headed, a kind person, never a racist to anyone, and just very businesslike, just handled her business, and she was pleasant. She wasn't this bigoted racist that Obama has painted her to be. She certainly wasn't fearful of people of color, or she'd have run from him, too. So the issue now comes to, who are Dot and Lloyd? Well, there was a second female vice president, according to this person who was sort of a roasting Madeline on her retirement in 1986 from the Bank of Hawaii. She was an escrow agent and a broker of loans or a mortgage facilitator of some sort. She definitely headed the real estate division of the bank and the escrow, which in and of itself might be a conflict of interest. To be an escrow agent or officer is one thing, but to be holding the deposits for the very loans you're making takes the integrity out of being an escrow agent. That agent is holding it sort of like a referee in any real estate transaction. Although these people don't need to do that because what they do is so secretive. So I began doing some research on who the second banker was, the second female banker, and in the pursuit of figuring out who were Dot and Lloyd. Well, the other female banker's name was Dorothy. And, of course, Dot is the nickname for Dorothy. So I began, and her full name was Dorothy Yamamoto. I don't know if she's alive or not today. I've been trying to discern that and research that, but to no avail so far. However, I found a Dorothy and Lloyd Yamamoto. Lloyd was born in Michigan and moved to Ohio and went to school at South High School in Cleveland, where he graduated in 1936. 1936 happens to be the same year John McCain supposedly was born in Panama. So here we have a strange synchronicity. I'm just pointing that out, that it's something worth looking at. Lloyd Yamamoto became a chemist. Lloyd Yamamoto's father, Charles, was a geneticist. That's significant. Now, they ended up, according to Davis, going to Seattle. They were the couple from Seattle, and it was on that basis that Jerome Corsi discerned that it might be Stanley Armour Dunham and Madeline Lee Payne Dunham, who were this couple described in the book Sex Rebel. But I knew that if I could find a Dorothy and Lloyd Yamamoto, that they were the other couple from the bank. So this relationship with Frank Marshall Davis had something to do with the bank, something to do with the Communist Party, and we know the Dunhams had communist Marxist associations in Seattle, including at the church they attended. What do you think of that now in terms of what's been hidden from us and connecting other characters into this scenario? Are you still there, Jim? Okay, Seth, if you're listening, we lost Jim again. So maybe you can try to bring him back. In the meantime, I will go on and talk about another aspect of this. So we have Barack Obama being in the presence, we know, of Frank Marshall Davis. He admits this, but the relationship he had was one of doing drugs, drinking, playing cards, and hanging around some rather rough people, not in the banking industry, and certainly no description of him selling insurance. We had been given the story that...
Can you hear me?
Yes, you're back. I don't know if you got to hear all that, Jim. I posed a question.
I got that. Well, I was trying to answer on part of it, but then it got shifted over, and then I couldn't hear or talk, so I'm not sure what happened. Sorry about
okay.
that.
Okay. Well, this is heavy information tonight, so there may be some interference going on. We know that happens sometimes. So you were saying, I didn't hear a word, so I'll give you another shot.
Why don't you just repeat the question so we can try to get back on track.
Okay. In light of all this information now, connecting Dot and Lloyd Yamamoto to the Dunhams through the bank and connecting them to Frank Marshall Davis, we know a bit more about the lifestyle of Barack Obama and his relationship with Davis, and also the reason for the Dunhams being in Hawaii. And I said it wasn't that Stanley had to go there because of his furniture salesman job.
Well, I mean, what's implied is kind of unwholesome. I've heard a lot of rumors to the effect that there's unusual sexual relationships going on, and while it may not be definitive proof, it certainly adds something to consider in that direction. Do you think I'm a little off course on that, or do you think that I'm reading into it what anybody else would if they read the information?
Yeah, I think you're reading it correctly. I see this is significant for a lot of other reasons because of the CIA connections I'm going to be bringing up in a moment. All these people are affiliated with the CIA. Now, we have a discrepancy on Obama's birth certificate, and one of the major discrepancies is you don't have an attending physician's signature. Usually that's on every certificate of live birth. The time of the birth is handwritten. They can type out a certificate, but we're looking for this original document that shows that someone was born and there was a doctor there and the doctor said it's a male or it's a female, spanked the baby on the rear end, got it breathing, cleaned it up, gave it to the mother, and made sure he signed that paper so he would get paid for his work. It's a pretty simple procedure. It's not rocket science, okay? And we're not being given the opportunity to see that document. The only plausible reason is that it's because there is a fraud being committed upon the American people. And the actual offering of a birth certificate from Obama shows his father's race as African. Now tell me what that means when your race is African. What language do you speak? What skin color are you?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of different skin tones in Africa as well as different languages throughout Africa. But the most important thing is, regardless of what country in Africa we're talking about, you're clearly not American.
Well, yes, and that is what I'm getting at. Is African a race?
No, Africa, well, that's the point. Africa itself has got actually more than one race associated with it. So I don't think that's a very descriptive and proper explanation of the child's origin or his true lineage.
Yeah, I use the example that this type of obfuscation is like wearing a wristwatch in a Shakespearean play.
Yeah.
Okay, it's an acronym.
It's out of phase with the expressions of the time, is what you're trying to say, I guess.
Yes, absolutely. They were called Negroes. It would have said Negro, most likely. It could have said colored. But that's more likely that would have been written somewhere in the Deep South, for example, you know, in Alabama or Mississippi or any of the southern states, that was a term back then that they would use. But certainly...
Yeah, but the African perception of their own race wouldn't be colored, because that expression, as you pointed out, is more indigenous to the descriptions that were generated in the Deep South in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
I doubt very much that they would refer to them as African. I think if he was, if it was under a normal circumstance, that they would have said he's Kenyan, he's Zimbabwean, they would have identified the region of Africa with the local respect for their own country to which the child was supposedly indigenous.
Yeah, the proper word would have been Negro. Okay, they didn't write white in those days. They wrote Caucasian, or they wrote they would write Hispanic, or they would write Oriental, or they might write Chinese to distinguish between Japanese and Chinese, because they're both considered Orientals. So to make those distinctions like that, would you say Egypt is on the continent of Africa?
Well, I would, but I'm not so sure that everybody would agree with me.
Yeah. well, this is why I make that point. So that's certainly something that makes the document look fraudulent, and there are, I would say there are a number of things, the seals, the actual registration number or the number of the certificate, things that are missing, the border, the paper, the whole thing is a fraud. There's at least 20 different points on that birth certificate that show that it was determined a horrible forgery. It wasn't even a good one. Now there's an issue of his selective service registration. He waited until 4 days before his 19th birthday. If he was born in 1961, he waited until 4 days before his 19th birthday, or five to be a little more generous with the days. And it wasn't registered by the Selective Service Board until September 4th, and then they changed the date to September 9th. So we have two dates that they supposedly log this number. And they use a document location number, a DLN, and that has been altered on the document. It has too many numbers in it, and they changed the appearance of that number to make it appear that it was registered in 1980. By adding an 8 to the front of the numbers. So instead of having the normal coding, which would begin 08, they change it to 808 to make it look like 80. In fact, it's the first number is 080. So adding an 8 makes it look like 8080. And that would give someone the impression that stood for 1980. That was one inconsistency. There were others, and without going through all of them, one of the most important ones, too, were the fact that he dated it July 30th of 1980. This is handwritten and dated, hand-signed and dated. And the stamp shows July 29th, 80. And it's a round postal stamp. And you could say, well, Barack didn't know what date was and he made a mistake. Well, that's a pretty important document. And I think they would make him fill out a whole new card to correct the date on that. They wouldn't let that slide. Those people are meticulous about those records. But the other thing about the stamp, forget about the date, the stamp was not used since 1970. They stopped using that particular type of stamp. And they wouldn't have used it in 1980, but they would use it in the year 2008 to try to give the impression of the old-time stamp, because they don't use that anymore either. They don't even use the one they used in 1980, but this is a 1970 stamp on a 1980 document. And they no longer use the stamp. They had 1980 stamps to use. They had 1971 stamps to use, technically speaking, okay? So we have more obfuscation of who the guy is. The Selective Service registration number doesn't contain a Social Security number, which everyone else has to put on the card. It's conveniently left out. All of that is allowed to slide. Any comments about that? I mean, there's really nothing you can say except, yeah, it sounds pretty cut and dry that that's a fraudulent document, even without seeing it.
Well, yeah, but I do have a comment to make on that, though, especially about the stamps. In my own researches, I've gone back to look for documents, you know, that were older than normally accessible. And the things that I found out is that the modern way of thinking is that you don't save stuff that long. And it seems to me, now that you've exposed this issue, that that's a perfectly valid proof that this thing is fraudulent, because it appears as if they chucked the 1970 series stamps a long time ago, but they managed to dig up a 1980 stamp, and they said, well, who's going to notice the difference? And they just went ahead and used it.
Yes.
And that would be my first inclination, to say, whoa, you know, looks like they just couldn't find the appropriate stamp.
Yes. Now, I have to credit journalistically and as a talk show host, I have to give due credit to DebbieSchlussel.com. Debbie Schlussel is the journalist and talk show host who actually put this on her website. She made contact with a man by the name of Stephen Kaufman, who for 39 years worked for the Department of Immigration and Naturalization Service. Actually, he was with ICE. 32 years, he had a secret clearance and at times even above that, and was well known for his work. He was the one that filed the original Freedom of Information Act roughly a year before the election, and they kept ignoring it, and he kept pressing for it, and finally they sent it to him at the last minute. They had to come up with a way to construct it is, I'm sure, the reason for the delay. Anyone with any skill could have done it in 5 minutes, but it took them a whole year to realize that this guy wasn't going to go away. And he had an immaculate reputation with the agency. He brought this issue up, and then he made contact, first anonymously, and then recently came out with his name and said, I want people to know who I am. That's critical to this information. Obama's people tried to say that this was a fake document that he presented. And he got this from the Selective Service Administration. it just doesn't end, Jim.
Well, so, I don't know. I've reached the point a long time ago where none of this surprises me.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing is the magnitude of it and the scope of the people involved is amazing.
Yes. Now, we've been given this Wizard of Oz type story about the Dunhams being born and raised in Kansas and Stanley Ann growing up in Kansas. And I began seeing early on into this piece well into part three, I knew already that this was a total concoction, and I began referencing the similarities to the Wizard of Oz, that we've been given another Kansas family, and poor Dorothy's got to be rolling over in her grave. Even the Wicked Witch of the West has got to be flipping out over this. She's the one that died, you know, I'm melting. So, that said, I get a call from a gentleman who grew up with Stanley Ann Dunham. He told me he had read Corsi's book, and it wasn't until after he had begun reading Corsi's book that he realized Obama's mother's name is Stanley Ann. It's not Ann Dunham. The media has been calling her Ann Dunham. It's Stanley Ann Dunham, and she was known at school as Stanley Ann. So this gentleman recognized the name and said, "My God, that's the girl I was in love with when I was in school." And he alluded to me that he went to a school in War Acres, Oklahoma. And I said, "Oklahoma?" And he said, "Yes." Now, you know already, Jim, that there's a dimension of my investigation into the Dunhams that took me to what city? You say it to the audience.
Well, it was War Acres because I went and did it for you.
Okay. And War Acres is a suburb of?
Oklahoma City.
Oklahoma City. Is Oklahoma City in Kansas?
Not usually, no.
Not usually. Not today, right? Okay. And it wasn't back in the 1940s either. Significant is that I had written about Tinker Air Force Base, and that also raised a flag. So the reference to Stanley Ann and Tinker Air Force Base, the description this person gave me was that it began to set off 4th of July fireworks in his head. And I said, "Really, why is that?" And he said, "I was in love with Stanley Ann. I came home and told my parents about it." And they sort of chuckled. And they said, "Well, you know, we're good friends with Stanley Ann's parents." And he met Stanley Ann's father and referred to him as Mr. Al. Mr. Al was from, get this, Chicago and Lebanon. And I had already made the connection of four addresses of Madeline Lee Payne Dunham in Chicago in my research, and I had made the connection that Stanley Ann went to Notre Dame de Jamour in Beirut, Lebanon. And now we had a second collaboration of that information, totally independent of my research. This is first-hand experiential testimony from this individual. And I said, "Did Stanley Ann love you back?" And he said, "She barely noticed me." He said, "It might have been that I was 18 months younger." And he went into school at age 6. So she began her kindergarten at about age 7 and a half. Then he said, "I have a picture somewhere, I can't find it, of the kindergarten class," but he said, "I found the one from first grade," and he sent it to me. And she looks different. She looks like she could be the girl that was the baby in the baby picture that I posted in part three of the Three Stooges article. However, she has blondish hair. Her hair is sort of wavy, early, but her hair is much kinkier later on. Her hair looks very wiry. Her chin is much longer a couple of years later. It looks as though they pulled a body switch, but he insists that the girl is Stanley Ann Dunham, and I cropped her her face out of the photo and did a blow-up of it so you could see it very clearly. Clearly, her chin and her nose are the two features that don't match her face. Neither does her hair. So it looks to me like a totally different person. Stanley Ann had a habit of not smiling very much at all, and certainly she didn't show as much of her teeth as she does in this photo. She doesn't really look like she's smiling, though. It just looks like her lips aren't closed, exposing her teeth. The face is not smiling, if you get my meaning.
Yeah,
in fact,
I do.
The photo itself, out of 33 kids in the photo, only 10 have any semblance of a smile on them. That's less than 30% of the kids. my informant told me that the school for the kindergarten and the first grade was a school for mind control. Mind control school for children is how he referred to it. So we know two things now, that Stanley Ann Dunham in War Acres went to a school called Kindernook, and she had a very interesting or a peculiar interest in fire. He was describing, and he said, this really stands out. It's always troubled me, and it's one of the most vivid memories I have of Stanley Ann Dunham. The teacher was reading Bambi, and the forest caught on fire, and Bambi had to run out of the forest. Stanley Ann was adamant about coming up to the front of the class to peer into the teacher's book to see the flames. She wanted to look at the fire, and she kept repeating that she wanted to see the flames. Eventually, the teacher couldn't get her to sit down. She made her go in the corner of the room as punishment. That's a pretty vivid story to tell somebody. It's a heck of a lot more believable than this fiction of the birth certificate and the selective service and all the other stories about the grandparents and the traveling around and that. He specifically said that they met this family first in Chicago before they all moved down to Oklahoma City. So they knew each other. They knew Mr. Al was his name. And you remember when you went and fetched that picture for me from the other Madeline Dunham in Oklahoma City? She said
yes.
That the man's name was Arnell, and I kept saying, I only come up with an Allen. With this information this man gave me, iced that. I knew I had the right Wesley Dunham, and his real middle name was Allen, and that she was not being totally honest about that, or she was led to believe that that was the middle name. There was one reference I could find in the whole world on this guy, and it was an entry into a cemetery database. So anybody can say, yeah, this guy's buried there, and who's going to dig up the grave and look to see if there's even a body in there or a casket? So it's a very meticulously planned deception, and it reeks of duplicity and double agents. Now, I'm going to jump ahead for a moment and just describe something that came my way as a result of my investigation from Israel. And that's an account that Stanley Dunham supposedly during the war sabotaged a plane, and he also stole some blueprints to another plane and gave them to the Nazis. And the story came from a lawyer who is a national security lawyer and knows quite a bit about the Mossad. I presume this individual is from Israel, and he's speaking to a guy who has a website called the Israel Insider. And he specifically names two of the planes that Dunham was suspected of sabotaging a B-17G aircraft. Now, this is the furniture salesman. This is up not far from Fort Leavenworth. either. And I immediately presumed that he worked for Army Intelligence, Fort Leavenworth. And this Israeli gentleman says that the CIA knew that he was with the Dachau DVD and the Abwehr, which again would lead one to Oklahoma City. So we have now some independent information backing up the conclusions I arrived at on the basis of all these little dots that we're connecting here. And Jim, you actually were in Oklahoma City to pick up that picture, and I was able to make a connection to the same individual. In fact, these people look different in every picture you see of them. Barack Obama himself does not have a progressive sequence of photos, a chronological sequence that you can say, this is Barack when he was born, this is when he was 1 year old, this is two, this is three, this is when he started kindergarten. You don't have any of that representation at all. Don't you find that a bit strange? Doesn't that raise a heck of a lot of questions in your mind?
Well, I judge that by by my own family history, and we have scores of photographs that show the kids growing up, and also we have I don't know how many photographs down through the years that show the children with the parents. On a fairly annual basis. And maybe my dad was more of an archivist than most people's fathers, but you would think there would be at least a few pictures.
Yes.
Down through the years. I mean, I would think that would be normal.
Yes. Now, there are some pictures. That's the beauty of this, is two pictures came to light because of this gentleman's information. And I posted one in the article, and there's an unidentified woman. We can't say specifically what her name is, and that may never be found out, or I might get lucky and and see her accidentally somewhere. Dunham is in the photo, a cigarette in one hand and his right arm totally around the woman's body, resting with his hand resting on her breast and her hand cupped over his hand. Now, this is another woman outside of his marriage. In the middle of the photo is a lady by the name of Grace Rashke. She is married to, or was married to, Dr. Charles Rashke, who is on the right side of the photo, sitting next to Madeline Dunham. He's got his hands in his coat pocket. Very handsome gentleman, well-dressed, very immaculate-looking. And he was a chemist for Wilson and Company and Safeway Foods. He was a food chemist. And I questioned a few things about that. He said, well, you know, like making things like peanut butter, and he was, you know, these fruit spreads and all of that. These companies produce those. My dad did that type of work. Keep in mind that the Dunhams had a connection with a chemist outside. Remember Dorothy Yamamoto's husband, Lloyd. So we have a strange connection. By the banking connection and the chemistry connection, we could likely say that Dorothy and Lloyd were CIA agents also, because my informant stressed that Mr. Al was a CIA agent, because his father was. And so we have now a gentleman in the middle of the photo who was unidentified, and he went unidentified for a couple of weeks. And then one of my listeners sent me an audio link to a website called Aetherius Society. And I listened to this description of his teachings, and then I listened to an audio clip within that audio clip, and then they went back into a discussion about his teachings, referring to him as the master and talking about the cosmic messages he was getting from beings from other planets, and that he had come to this enlightenment by studying yoga 8 to 12 hours a day over a 10-year period before reaching the elevated state of consciousness known as samadhi. Now, I totaled up the hours that would be, and the yoga itself, if he only practiced 8 hours a day for 10 years, it would be 29,200 hours. If he practiced 12 hours a day, it would be 43,800 hours. So you figure somewhere around 41,000 hours a year would be 10 hours a day. He couldn't even, there's a picture of him, which you alluded to, doing a half lotus. It's the neophyte's version of a lotus pose. And he's leaning severely to the right, to his right in the photo, which shows a tremendous lack of control, tremendous inflexibility, and an ineptitude to perform a basic yoga posture. So the whole thing to me sounds like this guy is a mind control cult leader. In fact, my appraisal of that organization is that it is a cult. Ken Adachi had read some material by them and came to the same conclusion. What was most interesting on that website was that I found a picture matching the guy in the photo from the 1940s, the late 40s, with the Dunhams in it, and it's Dr. George King. I did research on Dr. George King, and he, aside from being claimed to be this earthly channel, he's been chosen to be the primary terrestrial mental channel for the planet Earth. And he gets his messages from the cosmic masters of the solar system. One of the particular points about it is cosmic teachings and spiritual missions, which are foundational to the New Age. That's a term invented by the Illuminati. So this guy's job was much like a Tavistock Institute mind control expert. And he ended up setting up this organization in Los Angeles, which is where Barack Obama went to school. Likely he was Barack Obama's handler at some point. And I can, with confidence, with the association with the Dunhams, they all knew each other. This was probably his handler while he was at Occidental. Any comment about that?
Well, as you can tell, I'm not as familiar with all this material as you are, but just listening to the things you're saying and trying to remain totally objective, it's just amazing the way this thing weaves in and out like a tapestry. I think there's too many interconnections and too many unusual crisscrosses here to fall into the realm of coincidence. From my point of view and from my experience, it sounds to me like you've uncovered a real situation that was contrived, really planned. And I dare say that if you dig deeper, you're going to find more, because I know from things I've learned through the years that these operatives and these CIA types, they like to continue through several generations, if possible, so that they know the quality and reliability of the people that they're working with. And this just seems to reflect that type of approach.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I can tell you and the listening audience that the gentleman that supplied me with these photos is very rational, extremely intelligent, and very trustworthy. I have no reason to discount anything that he told me. In fact, it's provable. What is most striking, and I go back to this document that I found on a website, someone had sent me the link to this, and this document was taken off the web the next day after I had read it. It was gone, and the guy had received a death threat for having posted it. And I said to myself, well, they're not going to let him post it. I'm going to post it. And so I did, even without his permission. He's got to appreciate the fact that it's out there on the web again and that people are seeing it. Now, I did that. He didn't. Okay? And they know I've done this research, and it's quite remarkable because it substantiates the conclusions I drew without the proof, including the fact that the CIA, now this is to me a bit suspicious. They say that the CIA knows that there's not a DNA match with the Dunhams because they took DNA tests from glasses. I don't know if I buy that story. The reason I say that, Jim, is because he was working for the CIA. They know what this is about. This is an aspect of the CIA that has its links to the Abwehr, the SS, or the underground SS, and the Dachau DVD. And their base of operation through Operation Paperclip became Oklahoma City. It all adds up. There, no one can dispute the sense that that makes.
Well, I have still, to agree with yeah. you.
Okay. We really have a big delay here, or you're just pondering this.
Yeah, no, I was pondering it, but after giving it a few moments of thought, you know, I have to agree with you. It certainly adds up that way. Now, I have a question for you.
Sure.
Having put all this together, I mean, how far back do you think this actually goes? I mean, it's just amazing to me that the most immediate product of the investigation is the president-elect. But how far back do the roots of this thing go? I mean, what does it tell us about the preparedness and the overall thrust of the people who are so desirous to have him in power? Apparently, the organization behind all this is, you've talked about certainly two generations, probably three. How far back does this go, and what other entanglements might we find in this guy's so-called family background?
Well, in parts 3 and 4, I did quite a bit of research into the connections to the Rockefellers, and I came up with some other things briefly here that I can point out that will answer that question and connect some more dots. We have the family that was renting the family farm in Kansas to the Rockefeller Standard Oil Company. This is John D. Rockefeller. That's the story they put out there. They weren't farmers. We're speaking about Rolla Payne Dunham, I should say Rolla Payne. I'm adding the Dunham name because of Madeline Payne's marriage. One wonders if they even got married. Again, we had this thing started with a marriage that the parents were against. Stanley Dunham was a low-class drunk and a rabble-rouser, a woman chaser, a train hopper, and he was not fit for their daughter. They were against it, but they eloped. Well, we heard that story about John Sidney McCain Jr., John McCain's supposed father. And we heard all these stories about these people eloping and somebody tragically dying, and it's always the same story with everybody. And yet nobody's really paying attention to it other than somebody who's doing the type of genealogical research that I'm doing. Rolla Payne was an agent. And I found him on shipping records, on crews of ships. So he was an agent for the Rockefellers. He was an oil company agent who was going around the world working for him. So the next generation, which is Madeline, ends up working in the banking sector and in real estate. So they can take some oil money and funnel it into the bank and acquire real estate. And you take over a country not by firing shots at them, but by taking over their land and then by destroying their economy, which is exactly what's going on now. This has been a very patient, plodding along type of operation. They've been taking their time doing this, and it's gone on for well over 100 years. In the case of Barack Obama's grandfather, it's been exactly 104 years that this has been going on. Just with Rolla Payne's birth and coming all the way up to today. In fact, in 5 days, it'll be exactly 104 years. And I remember that date. That's the date he was born, December 25th. We have a death. We have a sacrificial death of a baby named Renee L. Abena Obama, who died in Maryland in 2004 after living 56 days. Born on Halloween, died on Christmas Day. Does that not sound satanic?
Yeah, that sounds very strange.
The 56 days numerology adds up to 11. 5 and 6 is 11. The number of years between the baby's death and the birth of the great-grandfather, this is now the other side, the Dunham side of the family. Ralph Waldo Emerson Dunham was born on the 25th of December, 1894, exactly 110 years. Numerologically, 110 is an 11.
Right.
Okay? Now, the next day, the tsunami hit Indonesia. This is a recap for some of the listeners. 146,000 people were reported killed, give or take a few, but they use that number. 1 in 4 is 5, and 6 is an 11. So we have three 11s. The 11-11-11 is a Masonic 33. Right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, there's an apartment that's actually a condominium in Tamarack, Florida. And the address of the apartment is kind of interesting. It's 10591 East Claremont Circle, Unit 111. We have 111, one more 11 in there. Now, numerologically, that could work out, but when you say 111, they're using a secret 11 there within the numbering system of that place. I don't see that as an accident. Let's add 11 to 33. What do you get? 44, right?
Right.
What president will Barack Obama be, numerologically speaking?
44th.
Is that chance that I made that calculation, do you think? Or do you think I actually see the ritual and understand the numerology behind it?
Well, I understand the numerology also, but to be honest with you, I wouldn't have made that connection. So your insights are amazing. But, that can't be a coincidence, because these guys do all that stuff numerologically, and it's a very interesting thing that you brought that out, Don.
Okay, so we have a baby that died on a specific date to make all these numbers work. Sounds to me like.
By the way, do you know how the child died, or is that?
Well, I only know it. It had a social security number assigned to it, and that's how he tracked it down. A funeral home reported the death. A hospital didn't. They wouldn't have had the baby in the hospital if they performed a sacrifice with it. And it's a very macabre subject to tackle, but the reason I bring that up is because it's an Obama. It occurred in the state of Maryland. In 2004. So this is something, and 2004 is a 6, by the way. You know, they get their numbers in whatever way they can. The the numerology is there, the obfuscation is there. Now, there's this property in Florida is mislabeled intentionally, like all the real estate fraud that's going on around the country. Her name shows up as Renee L. Abena Bama. They left the O off of it, and I had already determined that Bama was one of Barack Obama's aliases. Paul Bama, David Ajoa Obama, and now we have Brian Bama on the title to this property. Linda B. Hartuka, and Linda B. Hartuka may well be the woman that's the mother. Now, who that is, I've been able to track down a Hartuka in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Isn't it interesting? Phil Berg's lawsuit's coming out of Philadelphia. Does that could be just a coincidence. But it's in the life estate of Renee L. Abena Bama. In parentheses next to it, it says life estate. So someone set up some cash to buy that property. And mystically, that got worked out numerologically to add up to a 44. Amazing. Amazing. And then we had three more deaths that occurred at Obama's church. One was a guy that had contact with Larry Sinclair, the man who claimed he had several homosexual flings with Obama, one in a hotel room, the first one in a limousine, where Obama bought drugs and smoked crack cocaine in 1999. Now, he supposedly went to Columbia University to get serious about life. So somewhere in the 16 years after he graduated from there, in the word is 1983, he had a relapse. I mean, it's just one fiasco after another. It's total insanity. None of this absolutely makes any sense the way they describe it. Yet the way I've put it together makes a heck of a lot more sense.
Well, you know, you're describing the stuff that you're describing. I mean, it adds up to a really unnatural type of life. I mean, what do we know about Obama's childhood? Where was he as a kid?
Well, we know he was in Indonesia, but we were also told Indonesia, and I was mentioning the connection with the Standard Oil Company. The monopoly of Standard Oil was broken up by the Justice Department in 1966. And Pertamina was the national oil company developed with the help of Dutch Shell in Indonesia from 1945 until the year 2005. Now, there may have been other oil companies helping out developing stuff, but the location for Standard Oil was in Malaysia. So this whole thing about them being in Jakarta and going to this school, they convinced these people. It's very easy to bribe them. Look, we'll give you $1 million or we'll give you $10 million if you say he went to school here. What school is going to turn down that money? Especially as corrupt as these people are in carrying these conspiracies out. They have a long-term goal. I don't see the people of Indonesia celebrating the fact that Barack Obama is the president-elect. It seems to be a big deal in Kenya, though. They already are naming a school after him. Here in the United States, they're trying to get people to buy memorial coins. They're selling these on TV, Barack Obama coins. He promised change, and we've gotten no change at all. We've got more of the same. What we will get is complete communism and fascism melded into one philosophical, political machine that they're going to use to enslave everybody. That's basically all I see here. And there's rampant organized crime and money laundering going on. Still in Chicago, they're just trying to keep his name out of it, but he knows all these people. They're selling, trying to sell his seat for $1 million, and he's part of the paid-to-play scheme in Chicago. His wife got a job for something like $276,000 a year, something that she was not skilled to do, to be on a particular board. And they give each other these cushy jobs as political favors for helping each other rise up to higher states of power. This Blagojevich, the description that you get of this guy is he's nothing but a numbers runner or a drug pusher on the streets of Chicago and got permission from the mob to operate, maybe doing a numbers game or maybe involved in prostitution or drugs, all of that. And so when they get into positions of power where they have massive amounts of money, that's where the real estate scandals and the derivatives and hedge fund scandals go on. And these people are qualified to be in that arena on the basis of who they've associated with, operating on behalf of the intelligence agencies, which are the drug lords of the planet. The corruption, the money that's available to them as a result of all this corruption also corroborates all of this deduction that's coming out of connecting these dots together. It's a lot for people to handle, Jim. I admit that, which is why I'm not asking people simply read it, but listen to it described, because it certainly paints a picture. And I know the topic very well. I know it so well that I'm sorry, Jim?
I said, that I can tell. It's obvious you know it very well. And the other thing, though, that is obvious, especially in light of what you just said, is the interesting fact. I keep going back to the campaign money that was raised and the fact that he had some little jerkwater company set up or organization set up, which supposedly trickled funds in from various neighborhoods and people that wanted to support him. And yet, what was the amount that was raised? $250 million?
Mm-hmm.
Or some fantastic figure like that? I think that's one heck of a neighborhood action to be able to raise that kind of money on the Internet. I mean, there's a lot of really worthwhile organizations that try the same thing, and they're lucky if they come up with $10,000.
Let me tell you, Jim, there's not that much money out there on the Internet that was donated. That even after he said, I'm not taking public money, I'm taking, private donations, we have has everyone forgotten that he said that? That he wasn't going to take private donations from people. He was only going to take, public donations. He was only going to take private. That whole lump sum could have come from George Soros himself. Guy's a billionaire. What's $250 million? So,
well, that was my whole point, is the fact that there's no way that came from, some admiring Negro family in downtown Chicago.
Yeah, that's quite clear. Now we had stories of people that were street people going to vote, and Chicago's known for dead people, and I'm not saying this occurred in Chicago. There, the group you're talking about is called Acorn.
Right.
And mm-hmm. Obama used to raise money for that group. I heard something along the lines of that over a certain period of time, he raised $60 million for these people. So he had the connections there. He's got connections with convicted money launderer, real estate developer, Tony Resco, who's of Syrian descent. So now we have another connection to the Middle East. The guy that arrested Jerome Corsi is Raila Odinga. Obama is purported to have given his campaign $1 million. This guy was raised on East German philosophy, just like the Abwehr. And in fact, he's likely an Abwehr operative. Now, I came to the conclusion, going back to Dr. King real quickly here before we end our show, Dr. King, I determined, was an MI6 agent and a CIA agent, both. But he was working for definitely the dark side of the CIA, the same side that's causing all of this massive theft that's going on, the trillions of dollars that are being stolen. So these things can be connected by dots in more ways than one. And I think we handled at least 200 different ways tonight, don't you?
Well, I lost count, to be honest with you. But, yes, obviously there's an incredible interconnection. As a matter of fact, it looks like a fabric. You know, there's so many crisscross connections. And that should give any listener some insight into how much effort is put into all this stuff and how many layers upon layers of subterfuge and deceit our country is now composed of.
Yes. There's more on the real estate, more connections on an acquaintance of Stanley Ann Dunham, who it appears she's traveling or living with. And the guy was arrested in 2002, October 22nd, okay? 22nd is 2/11. 11 plus 11 is 22. It's a very important Illuminati number in 2002. So you have two sets of twos in this date. And, he made a bomb threat in a hotel and was arrested. I've tried finding out something else about it, but they said there was no bomb in the duffel bag. Why run away? Why drop a duffel bag and run away? I think it was covered up. I think there really was a bomb, and I think it was removed, or, you know, and they just didn't want to alarm people or whatever, or didn't want people to know who was actually behind planning the bomb. Somebody said, hands off, leave the guy alone. So there are numerous connections to this guy in these real estate transactions, and such a loser can't own all the properties that this guy owns or be affiliated with all these addresses unless he's working for the intelligence agencies. His name is Chet Hilburn Woolley. And he's associated to one of Stanley Ann Dunham's aliases, Kelly L. Shipleck. Woolley shows up at two addresses in Panama City, Florida, five in Honolulu, Hawaii, two in Kailua Kona, Hawaii, two in Londonderry, New Hampshire, one in Cliffside Park, New Jersey, one in Newport, Rhode Island, one in Corpus Christi, Texas, and one in Waltzfield, Vermont. Guy gets around.
Sounds like.
Yes. Obama's purported mother shows up in virtually every state in the union. She was a microloan specialist for the Ford Foundation, supposedly giving these microloans to indigent women, especially like in Indonesia. And I think what she was probably doing is working in the drug industry. They were probably just funneling drugs and cash into the Bank of Hawaii, and they were converting it to real estate. You got to remember that drugs fuels all of these operations, far, far more than anyone can imagine. But her other aliases are here. I don't know if the name Grandison would be a man or a woman. It sounds just like a total fiction. But there's a name, two names that she uses, Christine Allen and Grandison Greer Allen. Is it a coincidence that Mr. Al's CIA spook daughter uses the last name Allen? Maybe not. Certainly, she likes the name Kelly. She uses the name Kelly Ann Dunham and Kelly L. Shipleck. She likes it a lot more than Stanley Ann. So, but where she got Grandison from, I don't know. Of course, she shows up in the land of real estate money laundering, Maricopa County, Arizona, with an address in Glendale, Mesa, and Phoenix, and three in Tempe, Arizona. She has one in Kissimmee, Florida, seven in Honolulu, Hawaii, one in Canton, Massachusetts. She shows up quite frequently there. Ask Kelly Shipleck, too. She shows up there on another listing that I didn't even put in the article. I could put hundreds of these, or maybe even thousands, Jim, into this. It would just be one after another, and you could just add up the addresses. But after Canton, Massachusetts, Adelphi, Maryland, Hydesville, Maryland, and four in North Beach, Maryland. Of course, Obama shows up in Hydesville, Maryland, as well as Silver Spring, Maryland. So this is money laundering. By the way, he shows up as Paul N. Bama and has a partner, Maxine Francis. I came up with a couple of different names, an alias for Maxine Francis, and when I put it in the search engine, I put Maxine Frenas into the search engine. Google asked me, do you mean Maxine Francis? Very different spelling. Why would it trigger that? So this information is even programmed into the Google software that Google recognizes when this real estate is or these characters are being referenced. Very sophisticated operation. But it's nothing but money laundering, identity theft, and identity fakery supported by fraud and forgery. I don't know. Is that criminal?
Well, what a question. Let me reverse that and ask this. You know, how many normal individuals own that much property, and are living on average everyday means? I mean, I think that's pretty extraordinary.
Oh, yeah. Well, you got to ask yourself, what does he mean change? What was meant by that phrase?
Well, I'm almost afraid to go there, especially at the end of the show. But, just some of the other things we've pondered in our conversations in previous weeks, none of which are very wholesome, they also constitute change. And he could be up there saying everything that everyone wants to hear, but his own mental agenda could be entirely different from what people think it means.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
I mean, let's face it, we are inches away from being a fascist police state right now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, don't you think that if they usher in complete fascism under his regime, that would constitute a significant change?
Yeah, this is basically what we're witnessing is a coup. Under the pretext of an election, they're presenting it to us like it's an honest election. The right man finally won for America, and you've got everybody intoxicated with belief that our problems are going to be solved. But before that happens, people are going to have to lose their properties. They're going to have to lose all the money in the bank. They're going to have to stand in bread lines. They're going to be thrown into prisons, they're going to be beaten or murdered, and countless other atrocities. We've already got pedophilia and sex slavery going on. We've got prison abuse. We've got assault from the skies. and on the ground, both chemtrails and all kinds of toxins being sprayed into genetically modified foods. You've got phony oil crises going on. You've got bank theft. They're telling us that these banks are going under and they have to bail them out, but really what they're doing is just saying, we're going to take this over and we're going to federalize everything. We're going to make a new world order out of this. They're trying to destroy the country, and they're doing a damn good job of that. That's what's going on. Now, that's a very dark message, but this should shed some light on who these people are. There is light in all of this. If people are really awake and paying attention to what we talked about tonight, I did most of the talking. I apologize for that, Jim.
No, I don't think you need to apologize, Don. You know, you're more familiar with the subject. You are obviously passionate about what you were delivering. You have a message, and I don't mind if you monopolize the show. It's your show in the first place. But I think that the things you had to say were very important, and I don't mind being your sounding board. It's okay.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your involvement, and I appreciate Seth and Don hanging in there with us tonight. We did get a late start, and we took advantage of you. We got back to the benefit of our listening audience. So, Jim, I want to thank you. Let's pay close attention during the next week to what transpires here, because we could get into political issues. I do want to talk about technologies and things like that I know that you are very passionate about. I've had some interesting shows over the past week where we have talked about things going on, such as the Sound of Silence, these weapons that they're using to control mass amounts of people like they did in the Iraq invasion. Maybe we can talk about some of that stuff too.
Sure. I'm happy to talk about anything you want.
Yeah. These are things that they're going to start employing on us if we don't wake up and get a handle on the situation. And it's already working through the television, I can tell you that much. You know that yourself.
Absolutely.
Well, Jim, thank you so much. I encourage you, as well as the listening audience, go to my website, directlightproductions.com, click on articles, and you can read this new piece. It could have been written much faster. It had to be re-edited and re-edited again to compensate for developing facts, new evidence coming forth, and just the general scene of the election and what was transpiring. Because as I literally completed the first draft and was ready to submit it to the Idaho Observer, new events were unfolding as we spoke, and we held off. And these things kept going on, many of which we've talked about tonight on the show. These lawsuits and the development of the attempts for people to get the government to comply with the natural release of this information, requiring, in other words, Obama to release this information. All of those issues caused the delay with this. But many more facts came to light, even in the waning moments of putting this piece together. It's a lot of work. It was 3 months of work just to put this one portion of this massive article together. And there's more to come, I'm sure.
You bring up a very interesting point, though, Don, which in closing, maybe we should just lightly touch upon. The previous information that you had let out regarding the Obama issue and the fact that people responded to it out of their own sense of urgency and duty actually helped you to further your investigations. Now, that's exactly the kind of spirit that all of us should have, not just with this particular issue, but with everything that's going on in the country. Do you really think the United States would be at its present level of degeneration if 300 million watchdogs were always scrutinizing what the government and all of their affiliates are doing? I don't think so. And it's too late. We can start right now.
Well, yes, that's why I'm so passionate about discussing this on the show tonight. This gives people something to contemplate over the weekend. And, you know, we have the holiday season upon us now for the next couple of weeks, and you can expect a lot of games to be going on. I can tell you those people out there in the listening audience that this is not the only thing I'm looking at. I'm looking at things in a much broader perspective, and things come my way every day just in terms of how we are all being attacked through the internet, through telemarketing, through things in the mail that are just further extension of the type of corruption I'm talking about tonight and that we talked about last night and the night before that and the night before that and pretty much a year and a half on this show. It's not an accident that things are the way they are. We've allowed them to get there, and we've talked on, you and I, Jim, started this whole series of consciousness and talking about responsibility and realizing what is real and what is just an illusion. We've talked about all this stuff. Once this research is just a living example of what we've been teaching over the past month, what we've been sharing with our listening audience. It's actual proof of what you can accomplish when you put that into action. That's a pretty powerful statement to make. I was going to say I'm not being egotistical in saying it. I'm just practicing what I preach.
And that's exactly what I was about to interject. There's nothing that prevents other people from doing exactly the same thing. I mean, nobody's crippled. You can do research. You can make, you can have access to the same sources that Don uses. You know, if there are things that don't feel right, why not look into them? Why not churn up the anthill and find out all the rest of the dirt that's out there? It's going to affect your lives. It's going to affect our children's lives. There's no reason why we shouldn't look into it.
Yeah.
You know, the things you do, Don, I'm sure other people can emulate, and even if they don't have the same depth of success, they would certainly be surprised at what they would turn up.
Yes, and I have to thank those listeners out there that have emailed me or called into the show sharing information along these lines, because there are folks out there, Jim, that are doing just what you described and have shared information. Had it not been for Noella in Canada. This is a lady in Canada that emailed me the link for audio files that led me to Dr. George King. She never knew that's why she was sending me that, but that's how the spirit works. The higher intelligence of the universe brings us together in very mysterious ways that the truth works through all of us. When we take action, she's a perfect example. I have another listener who goes by the name Middle Yaya, and Middle Yaya is constantly sending me links to very important information. And so, you know, we have to thank Middle Yaya for doing the same thing. And there are many other listeners. I'm thinking of a few that. Send me quite a bit of information. People are doing research, and they're helping me at the same time. I'm not doing all this on my own. What I'm able to do when they send me something that's maybe not on the surface so obvious, when I'm able to discern that there's something there, there's a reason why this happened, I'm able to find that reason and make more of these connections. We're rewriting history is what we're doing. And on this show and through the work you're doing, you're going to rewrite science as well. You've already done that, but it's going to continue to happen. And there's just going to be too many people waking up for them to stop it. They'd like to stop it.
Well, that's true, and that's how it should be, because I don't know if people realize it or not, but the concept of war, you know, is embedded in our minds as being an exchange of cannon fire and soldiers shooting one another and airplanes dropping bombs and all this kind of stuff. And as long as that horror is avoided, people feel somewhat safe. What they don't realize is that the modern concept of war is all based on intelligence, manipulation of the economy, subtle control of the mind, and all of these other things that we've been discussing for months. And so, in actuality, we are already at war. And people shouldn't be complacent, because we can either win this war or lose this war, depending on our dedication and our firmness. You know, these reptilian people that are behind all of this are not infallible, and they're not unbeatable. And the mere fact that we can expose all of this amongst ourselves and that there are other good people attempting to do other things demonstrates what we could do as a nation if we really decided to do it. There isn't one facet of our entire structure as a country that hasn't been penetrated by this vermin. And it's our job, just like when you call the exterminator to get rid of a nest of termites, it's our job to sweep this stuff all out and return to the type of life and the type of ideology that the United States was known to represent for at least 100 years. This is the kind of thing that I feel is our obligation as good moral people with a superior level of consciousness. And that's my message for the holidays. We should really concentrate on this and understand that we are already at war. Don't let the apparent peace deceive you.
Yes. Now, well said, Jim. In closing, may I share a short story with the listening audience? And as you contemplate, if you haven't purchased gifts for the children yet, whoever they might be, your children or relatives or something that you're going to get for maybe a charity that donates to impoverished children. Consider the meaning behind this story, and consider that this is the state of our educational system and our children. Miss Sally Edwards is a highly esteemed third grade teacher at Jacksboro Elementary in Texas. In an effort to prepare her students for a Texas Achievement Test, she compiled an exam consisting of 20 questions, which she administered to her class on December 9, 2008. The exam purposely covered a broad array of topics. I call your attention to question number 11, which simply read, "List in any order the four seasons." Now, there are four blank spaces, each numbered. Now, could you possibly imagine that 76% of the students gave the following answer? Number one, dove season. Number two, deer season. Number three, duck season. Number four, turkey season. Some left out duck season and put quail season in its place. Think about
that,
folks. During the Christmas holiday, during the Christmas season and New Year's, think about where our children's minds are, how they're being trained, how they're being influenced by the media, by video games, by propaganda, by their peers, by drugs, by all of the negative influences out there designed to control them and create them as if they were unconscious or subconscious humans, or even less, as if they were on the order of a robot. Certainly not how we want to see our children grow up. It's certainly going to have an impact on what is occurring today if we don't do something about it now. Any other words you want to add, Jim?
No, not really, except for the fact that anybody in my age group or your age group, Don, can look back at our own past and see that this process has actually been very dynamic and is already at work. So this is not our imaginations, and it's not something which you can excuse to future happenings. This is a process which has been ongoing, and they have been very, very fervently pursuing their agenda to make this occur. So you cannot ignore it, and you have to understand its severity. And let's all do something about it.
Yes. And with that, Jim, I'm going to wish you and yours a Merry Christmas. Say hello to all the folks over at Millennial Technologies, if you would. And we want to wish Don and Doug Newsom a happy birthday. Don is probably just concluding his birthday party about now. And they just turned 39, I think, Jack Benny's age. Maybe I'm a little over on that, but maybe I hit it right on the head. Also, thanks to Seth Hendrick for the sound, and most of all, the listening audience for tuning in to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. In the meantime, if you don't listen to us before Christmas, we want to wish you all a very Merry Christmas. We will be broadcasting, however, so tune in all next week. We have some great shows lined up for you. I want to wish the listening audience a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.